Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are taking the road less traveled, quite literally, as we explore M. Scott Peck's philosophy, focusing on his massive classic, The Road Less Traveled.
Yeah, this is one of those books that really tries to bridge, you know, hard science, psychology with, well, spiritual wisdom.
It does. And the central idea, it's pretty stark, isn't it?
It is. He doesn't pull any punches. Life is difficult. That's the starting point.
And real growth, like psychological and spiritual growth, only happens if you face that difficulty head on.
Right. Conscious effort, discipline, not trying to find the easy way out.
Which is what most of us do, let's be honest. We look for shortcuts to feeling good.
Mm-hmm. But Peck says, nope, the shortcut is the hard road. It's discipline.
So our goal today is to unpack that, to try and answer that huge question. How do you live a meaningful life when, you know, pain is just part of the deal?
Mm. It's really a roadmap for growing up, psychologically speaking. And it starts with that tough truth, not some feel-good platitude.
Okay, so let's get into the mind behind it. Who exactly was Morgan Scott Peck?
Well, Morgan Scott Peck, he lived from 1936 to 2005. An American psychiatrist, and he had some serious credentials. Harvard Case Western for his MD.
And a lot of real-world experience, too, right? Not just academic.
Oh, yeah. Deep clinical experience. He was in the U.S. Army Medical Corps, actually rose pretty high, lieutenant colonel, worked as a psychiatrist there.
So he saw people dealing with intense situations, real suffering.
Definitely. And I think that shaped his views. It wasn't just theory. He saw the complexities, the ethical knots.
But what makes him stand out, I think, is that he went broader than just standard psychiatry?
That's the fascinating part. He really dared to connect scientific thinking with spirituality. Back then, talking about the spiritual side of mental health, kind of taboo in professional circles.
But he insisted they were linked, like fundamentally connected.
Inextricably linked, yeah. He basically argued that deep psychotherapy often is a spiritual journey. You're working on evolving your soul, as he might put it.
So you have this blend.
Mm-hmm.
The sharp analytical mind of a psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
and the searching quality of someone asking deeper questions.
Exactly. That combination gave him a unique kind of authority. He could talk about neurosis 1 minute and grace the next and make it sound coherent.
He really helped validate that spiritual dimension as part of understanding the whole person.
He was definitely a pioneer there, no doubt.
Okay, let's dive into the book itself. It's presented as a guide, right? For personal growth.
Yeah, grounded in all that psychiatric experience. And it kicks off with that unforgettable line.
Life is difficult. Bam.
Yeah.
Right at the start.
Yeah. And it sounds negative, but he argues it's actually liberating.
How so?
Because, he says, most of our misery doesn't come from the problems themselves. It comes from trying to avoid the pain involved in solving them. Mm. We're just denying that problems are normal.
So once you accept, okay, life has problems, you can stop wasting energy wishing it didn't.
Exactly. You free yourself up to actually start dealing with them constructively.
I like how structured the book is. It seems to build moving from the practical stuff towards something bigger.
It really does. It's got four main sections, like building blocks. First up is discipline.
The tools you need to face reality.
Right. Then it moves to love, but he redefines it in a very specific, disciplined way.
Okay.
Part three is growth and religion. Which isn't just about church. It's about how we see the world, our maps.
And needing to update those maps constantly.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the fourth part, grace. This kind of mysterious, benevolent force that helps us along.
Wow. That's a huge range.
Mm.
From like clinical psychology terms to grace.
It is ambitious. He's tackling mental health, neurosis, character disorders, love, transference, even concepts like entropy from physics, trying to synthesize it all.
So if avoiding pain is the root of psychological problems,
yeah.
What's the antidote? What lets us face it?
That's where discipline comes in. Part one. It's not punishment. For Peck, discipline is a set of tools. Four specific tools.
Okay, what are they?
These are the things you use to solve life's problems instead of running from the pain.
Got it. So tool number one.
The absolute foundation. Delaying gratification.
The marshmallow test writ large.
Sort of, yeah. It's about scheduling pain before pleasure, intentionally.
Like tackling that awful report first thing Monday morning, then getting coffee?
Exactly. Or studying now for the exam later. You push through the discomfort because the reward or relief on the other side is worth it.
He uses the example of a kid eating the cake first versus the icing.
Right. He does. It's simple, but mastering that choice predicts so much success. Always choosing the icing first leads to chaos. Cake first that builds freedom.
Okay, makes sense. Tool two.
This one's huge for emotional health, acceptance of responsibility.
Owning your stuff.
Totally. But he makes this really sharp distinction here between taking too much responsibility and too little.
Oh, interesting. Like two ways to get it wrong.
Precisely. True freedom means accepting responsibility for your own life, your choices, your problems. But many people fall into one of two traps.
What are they?
On one side, you've got neurotics. They take on too much. They blame themselves for everything, even things they can't control.
Making themselves miserable.
Exactly. They internalize everything. Then on the other side.
To blamers.
You got it.
Anna.
Those with character disorders,
yeah.
They take too little responsibility. It's always someone else's fault. The world owes them.
Uh-huh. They make everyone else miserable. We all know people like that.
Right. So growth here is finding that tricky middle ground. Owning what's yours, letting go of what isn't. It's about accurate responsibility assignment.
That's a really useful distinction. Okay, tool number three, sounds. Potentially painful, dedication to truth.
Mm-hmm. This one requires real courage. It means constantly checking and revising your maps of reality.
Your mental models of how things work.
Exactly. We all have them, need them. But reality changes, or maybe our map was flawed from the start. Admitting that, especially about deeply held beliefs about ourselves, our relationships, the world, that hurts.
Because it means admitting you were wrong or living based on a falsehood.
Precisely. And he uses the psychoanalytic idea of transference here as a key example.
Explain that again.
Transference is when you unconsciously project feelings and attitudes from a past relationship, like maybe with a parent, onto a current one, like your boss or partner.
So you're reacting to the past, not the present person.
Exactly. You're living a kind of lie based on an old, inaccurate map. Dedication to truth means doing the hard, painful work of seeing those projections and correcting them. Seeing reality as it is.
Wow. Okay. And the final tool, number four.
He calls it balancing. It's like the master discipline that holds the others together.
Balancing what?
It's about flexibility, nuance, knowing when to apply the other tools. For instance, knowing when to be brutally honest and when maybe withholding some truth is actually more compassionate or wise in that moment.
So it's not rigid rules.
Not at all. It's judgment. It also involves something he calls bracketing.
Bracketing.
Yeah, it means like temporarily setting aside a strong belief or assumption you have just to try and see a situation from a totally different angle without prejudice.
Like stepping outside your own viewpoint for a bit.
Exactly. It requires real mental flexibility. True discipline isn't rigid. It's adaptable and wise.
That makes sense. So the four tools, delaying gratification, accepting responsibility, dedication to truth, and balancing, they're the foundation for dealing with life's difficulty.
That's the core of part one. And this capacity for effortful, wise choice leads directly into part two, love.
Right. And he kind of throws a bomb under the usual idea of romantic love, doesn't he?
He really does. He says falling in love, that intense, obsessive feeling, it's not real love.
Ouch. Why not?
Because it's effortless, essentially. It's a temporary collapse of ego boundaries, probably biologically driven to get us to pair up. But it's passive, and it always fades.
So if that's not love, what is?
Ugh. Now we get to his famous definition. Real love, for Peck, is an action. It's a choice. It's work.
Okay, give us the definition.
Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth.
Let's unpack that. So it's volitional. A choice.
Yes. Not just a feeling that happens to you. Extend oneself. That means effort. Going beyond your comfort zone, maybe sacrificing something.
Pushing past laziness or fear.
Exactly. And the purpose, nurturing spiritual growth. That's the key.
Not just making someone happy or comfortable.
Nope. It's about helping yourself and the other person become more mature, more evolved, closer to their best selves, even if growth is sometimes painful.
So real love might involve difficult conversations or setting boundaries, things that don't feel nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because the goal is growth, not just immediate comfort or avoiding conflict. He explicitly contrasts this with dependency, or what he calls cathexis, just being attached to someone. Real love is work aimed at evolution.
That's a demanding definition.
Yeah.
It really shifts the focus.
It does. And that leads into part three, growth and religion.
Now, when he says religion, he means something broader than just organized religion, right?
That's crucial. For Peck, your religion is your personal worldview, your fundamental assumptions about life, the universe, everything. It's your map of reality.
Okay. So spiritual growth is?
It's a process of constantly revising that map, testing it against reality, being willing to change your deepest beliefs when the evidence suggests they're wrong or incomplete.
Like a scientist updating a theory.
Exactly like that. A good scientist is happy to be proven wrong if it leads to a better understanding. But for us, emotionally updating our core beliefs is terrifying and painful.
Yeah, because our map is our sense of security.
Right. And he does offer a caution about institutional religion here.
What's that?
That sometimes it can offer ready-made maps that discourage personal questioning, which can actually hinder individual spiritual growth if people just accept the map without examining the territory for themselves.
Interesting point. So if this journey of map revision and discipline is so hard, are we just left to struggle on our own?
Ah, well, that brings us to part four, grace.
Okay. What does Peck mean by grace?
He defines it as this powerful, benevolent force, something that originates outside our own consciousness, but works to nurture our spiritual growth.
Like divine intervention.
Yeah.
Or something else.
It's deliberately a bit mysterious. He connects it to things like serendipity, lucky coincidences, moments of sudden insight or healing that seem to come from nowhere, even the wisdom emerging from our unconscious mind.
He calls it anti-entropic, right? What's that mean?
Yeah, that's a fascinating concept. Entropy is the tendency in physics for systems to move towards disorder, chaos, decay.
Like a hot cup of coffee cooling down or a building crumbling.
Exactly. So grace, for Peck, is the counterforce. It's this mysterious push towards order, complexity, growth, consciousness. It works against the universal tide of decay.
So it's like unearned help.
That's a good way to put it. It's the help we don't consciously generate through our own discipline, but which seems available to us.
Yeah, it's a whole other dimension beyond just willpower.
It does. It suggests that while our effort is crucial, we're also participating in or aided by something larger than ourselves. Accepting grace, though, requires humility. Being open to receiving help you didn't earn.
Which sort of runs counter to the acceptance of responsibility theme earlier. It's a paradox.
It is, and Peck embraces these paradoxes. Balancing responsibility with openness to grace is part of that master discipline of balancing.
Okay, so let's try to pull together the big messages here, the key themes. Theme one seems to be that fundamental starting point.
Life's inherent difficulty is the foundation for growth.
Yeah.
The problems aren't bugs, they're features. They're the grit that polishes us.
So the reflection is, don't resent the struggle. It's actually the engine of becoming wiser and stronger. Avoiding it just means staying stuck.
Exactly. Theme two.
Discipline is the pathway to freedom, not a cage. This one flips the script on discipline.
Right. We think of discipline as restriction. But Peck says by mastering these tools, delaying gratification, taking responsibility, you actually free yourself.
Free yourself from what?
From your impulses, your moods, your past conditioning. You gain real agency. Like, managing your finances requires discipline, but it leads to financial freedom, right? Same principle applies psychologically.
Got it. Theme three feels like the toughest one, personally.
The necessity of confronting truth and revising our maps.
Yeah. The reflection here is that our mental health is kind of proportional to how honest we're willing to be, especially with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. It means facing the fear of questioning things you've always believed. That takes guts.
And the final theme connects back to that mysterious element.
The benevolent mystery of grace. Even with all the hard work, we're not entirely alone in this.
The reflection being that, alongside effort, we need humility. Openness to receiving insights or help that seem to come from beyond our own striving.
Yeah, recognizing we're part of something bigger. It requires letting go of total control.
These are powerful themes. And the book is full of lines that just stick with you, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. He had a real gift for crystallizing complex ideas. Let's hit a few key quotes.
Okay, let's start with that definition of love again. It's worth repeating.
Definitely. Quote one, love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth.
The meaning really lands. Love as choice, effort, commitment to growth, not just a fuzzy feeling.
Exactly. It reframes relationships entirely. Quote two is that sharp diagnostic tool we talked about.
Neurotics make themselves miserable. Those with character disorders make everyone else miserable.
Right. It's such a clear, practical way to think about responsibility. Am I internalizing too much blame or externalizing too much? It prompts self-reflection.
It really does. And quote three captures that idea about leaning into difficulty.
The truth is that our finest moments are most likely to occur when we are feeling deeply uncomfortable, unhappy, or unfulfilled.
So that discomfort, It's not a stop sign. It's maybe a signal.
Yeah, a messenger saying, hey, something needs to change here. There's an opportunity for growth. It transforms suffering into potential insight.
Okay, this is all great insight, but how does it translate? Let's talk real-life applications.
Absolutely. How can you use this stuff Monday morning?
Right. Let's start with professional or personal goals, that first tool.
Delaying gratification.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practically, this means recognizing the long game. Every hour you spend now learning a new skill, studying, or even just doing the unpleasant but necessary task
pays off later. Less stress, more options down the road. It's an investment.
Exactly. Resisting the urge for immediate ease for future benefit.
And in relationships, parenting, partnerships.
Use Peck's definition of love as a guide. Ask, is this action really nurturing their long-term growth and independence? Or is it about my own comfort or keeping them dependent?
So it might mean not rescuing them from every mistake.
Precisely. Or having that difficult, honest conversation you've been putting off, because avoiding it prevents growth for both of you. It challenges enabling behavior.
That's tough, but important. What about dealing with setbacks, failures?
This is where acceptance of responsibility comes in. When something goes wrong, instead of just blaming external factors, the economy, bad luck, other people,
ask. Okay, what was my part in this? What could I have done differently?
Exactly. Even if it was only 5% your contribution, focusing on that 5% is where your power lies. It shifts you from victim to agent. It empowers you to learn and change for next time.
That changes everything, doesn't it? Instead of waiting for the world to be different, you focus on your own actions.
That's the agency the book offers.
So, wrapping up, what are the final takeaways? What's the big shift this book offers?
For me, it's that core idea. The struggle isn't an obstacle to the path. The struggle is the path. The difficulty is where the growth happens.
And it's not just saying life sucks. Huh. It gives you tools, those four disciplines, to actually navigate that difficult path with purpose.
Right. It's practical. It puts the power and the responsibility back in your hands.
And the lasting insight. Why is it the road less traveled?
Because it's hard. It requires honesty, courage, effort, and humility. It's easier to seek comfort and avoid pain. This book validates that the path of real growth is difficult, but it also shows why it's ultimately the most rewarding.
It marries the psychological with the spiritual in a way that feels really integrated. You need both the rigorous self-examination and the openness to something beyond yourself.
Exactly. It's a holistic guide for a challenging but ultimately meaningful journey.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acontra Foundation.